This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moscoen. The telemarketing industry grosses more than $600 billion a year. According to Telemarketing Magazine in 1992, 184 million Americans bought something over the phone. There are laws and regulations that guide legitimate telemarketers, but since it's such an anonymous transaction, it's ripe for corruption. Fred Schulte is investigations editor at the Fort Lauderdale Sun Sentinel and began looking into telemarketing fraud several years ago. He wrote a series of articles about illegal companies selling bogus trips to Florida. That investigation led to a book called Fleeced. In the book, he says that illegal telemarketers do billions of dollars of business a year, ripping off unsuspecting customers through their elaborate schemes. And the easiest target, according to Schulte, is the elderly. And he says phone scam artists have become so sophisticated, they've developed their own culture, even their own lingo.
Yes, they have their own manner of doing business and their own language, and it's truly amazing. And some of the people who start off getting into this business answer classified ads and that promise them like $100,000 a year, and they become what are called fronters. And when you're a fronter, you're sort of the lowest form of life in the telemarketing room, and you have to perhaps even call at random through phone books. They call that cold calling, and you may have to just use a phone book of some area and call everybody and keep calling and calling and calling. And the rate of sales for these cold calls is very low. If you get one out of every 30 or so, you're lucky. As you move up in the ladder, you can graduate to a separate room, which is where the big money is made, and that's called the reload room. And the reloaders are sometimes called bombers in the business, are people who can absolutely sell you anything, and they're just unbelievable. And many of them will do at least $5,000 or $6,000 a week in commissions.
What is their pitch? I'm curious, because I have I'm generally very, very rude to people who call me trying to sell me something over the phone. What makes these people in the reload room so successful?
Well, the people in the reload room sort of have developed that they're like the PhDs of this business, and they've graduated into their own pitch. They use whatever works. And when you're a fronter, you sit there with a script taped to the wall, reading it over and over again to everybody who answers the phone. And like I said, it's pretty dreary, and most people just do hang up. When you get to the reload stage, you sort of have your own pitch. You may have four or five of them that you use, and you sense over the phone what somebody is going to bite on or what they're not going to bite on. And that's one of the reasons that I advise people who ask me about it, who think they can outsmart the telemarketer, just to forget about it, because they have a response to every sort of objection you can think of. But these reloaders are really, they're really quite talented at this, and they seem to have some kind of sense of knowing exactly what it'll take you to buy. And of course, also, they'll tell you almost anything that it takes to make you buy. That's why some of them, when it finally comes time for law enforcement to crack down on a telemarketing room, they'll normally be more interested in going after the reloaders than the people in the front room, because the reloaders are the people that perhaps are really, really stretching the truth.
Well, I guess what the question that might be raised is that many people get calls from telemarketers, and it seems that if you pick up your phone, you're in control of the conversation. You can just hang up. You don't have to buy anything that anyone is selling you over the phone. What is it about this interaction, you think, that seduces some people, and whether it's the elderly or not, seduces them into buying something they wouldn't normally buy?
Well, in a number of cases, the illegal telemarketer has done his or her homework and is able to make you susceptible in some way. And like, let's say, an overseas job type of deal. There are many. Every time the economy turns sour, people are starting to get laid off from their jobs. These overseas employment opportunities, telemarketing rooms open up, where they'll take you for about $600 and promise you some job paying $70,000 overseas, and you send them $600, and of course you get nothing. And they're taking advantage of the fact that you're susceptible. In other areas, they may go out and buy lists of people, which is perfectly legal to sell lists, but if they're marketing magazines where you can purchase the names of people, for example, who've been denied credit in the last 30 days, or people who are chronically late in paying their bills, and you can get a list of 100,000 people with their names, addresses, and phone numbers, and you may want to call them and hit them up with some sort of a deal that they can repair your credit or get you a new credit card. So with the use of very sophisticated mailing lists and other devices like that, it's possible to target people, and you hit people that you know are going to be susceptible to your pitch.
Is there a going rate for someone's name on a list?
Well, they vary. Some are just a few cents a name. Then they have what they call in the trade sucker lists or reload lists, or people who are known to have lost sometimes tens, 15, maybe 20, even $100,000 to telemarketers. These names can cost about $20. And where they're used is in one of the most cynical of the telemarketing frauds, which is what they call the recovery room. When after normally, and a lot of times it's an elderly person's been taken for $10,000 or $20,000 by all variety of telemarketing scams, the telemarketer will then sell that name to a new type of telemarketing room called a recovery room, and the recovery room will call up with a pitch saying, we can help you get your money back. And sometimes they'll say they're affiliated with the FBI or some state agency, and if you just send them $600 more, then we'll help you get your money back. And, of course, you lose even more money. You lose an additional $600. So the names of people who can almost constantly, with every phone call, be counted on for some that you can bleed them no matter when you call them or with whatever product, those names can go for about $20 a piece. So it's a very expensive list, but it's considered a very high hit list, they call it, or sucker list.
Well, we're going to take a short break and talk some more. And our guest today is Fred Schulte, and he's written a book called Fleeced, and it's about telemarketing scams. We'll be back after a very short break. This is Fresh Air. Fred Schulte is our guest today, and his book is called Fleeced, and it's about telemarketing scams. Another piece of language associated with illegal telemarketing is something called the boiler room. How does that work?
Well, the boiler room is sort of a term that's been used over the years for a phone room, synonymous with a phone room, and it's really a term that speaks of the pressures to make sales that are going on in one of these rooms, and these can be phenomenal. Many of the boiler rooms that have operated in Florida, you know, used to have bells going off, you know, when sales were made, and somebody might grab a whole fistful of $50 bills or $20 bills and throw them up in the air and say, the next person that makes a sale gets this, and the pressure is just phenomenal. It's like cigarettes and coffee and pressure and pressure and pressure, and you just don't last unless you can make many, many sales, and a lot of people just can't take it. They can't take the pressure, or they realize that, let's face it, this is not an illegal operation, and you're scamming people, and you start to think, well, gee, this could be my mother that I'm scamming here, or this could be my dad, and this is no good, and they get out of the business. But that whole pressure is more why it's called boiler room.
And I would think with these illegal operations, these boiler rooms, that they can set up and I guess set down very quickly, in that they have to be pretty mobile because they have to stay ahead of getting caught.
Absolutely. There are a number of different areas in the South Florida area, that sort of from Miami to Boca Raton, that over the years have been called Maggot Mile, because there have been so many of these sort of decaying office buildings that have been host to dozens and dozens of phone rooms that move in and then leave very, very quickly. And you can rent an office suite where the phone hookups are already in, and you just rent the suite, bring in the phones, plug them in, slap up a script on the wall, hire a few telemarketers, and you're in business.
Well, you're also in a race against time, are you not? Because at some point, you're going to be found out, or there are going to be some disgruntled people at the other end of the phone that are going to be complaining to the police.
Well, most of fraudulent telemarketers don't worry too much about complaints to the police because they really don't have much of a chance of getting caught. In the boiler room hotspot areas of Southern California, Texas, Arizona, South Florida, police have over the years not really been that diligent about seeking out boiler rooms. The old adage of the telephone, illegal telephone sales business is that you don't sell in the state that you're located in, which means that if police are getting complaints, they're getting, in Southern California, they're coming from somebody in Montana. And that's not exactly high up on the list of local police to investigate fraud complaints coming from people out of state. The phone operators know that and act accordingly.
How then is law enforcement able to arrest, track down people that are in the illegal telemarketing industry? In that you have what looks like people engaging in voluntary behavior because the person answering the phone who is being sold this illegal product can always hang up the phone. I mean, they are in part in control of this conversation. I would assume there are no tapes of the transaction that occurred, so it'd be hard to prove one way or the other. And I don't know how much of a paper trail there is. Does that make it more difficult for law enforcement?
In some ways, and it's interesting that you mentioned tapes. Oftentimes there are tapes of the transaction, but they're tapes made by the telemarketer in order to shield himself from law enforcement. They'll initially give you the pitch that convinces you to buy, and all the misrepresentations and lies that they made in order to induce you to buy will be made at that stage. And then once you've agreed to buy, they'll have someone else call you back, a different person call you back and say that this conversation is being taped, and then getting you on tape assenting to the purchase so that they have you. So if you try to complain later, they just play the tape, but they don't play the part in which they made all of the false representations that were in fact the wire fraud. So it is difficult to get these cases. One rather elaborate operation that is the counterexample to that was something that the FBI launched called Operation Disconnect, which was the government's major foray into cracking down on phone fraud. It's resulted in over 300 arrests. And in that case, they devised an elaborate sting operation in which they had some ex-telemarketers and undercover FBI agents go into these phone rooms and try to sell them on purchasing an automatic dialing machine that allegedly would boost their profits dramatically. And being motivated by greed, as they were, many of the boiler room operators fell for it. The FBI was also able to get with the actual owners of the phone rooms, something that they hadn't been able to do in the past when they came up with this elaborate sting operation, because these deals required the phone room operator to spend $30,000 or so buying this alleged auto dialer, which didn't exist. And so they went all around the country selling, conning the con artists and leaving an excellent trail of videotapes and audio tapes of the actual operations of the room. What they would do is they would come in after they convinced the owner that they're going to help them set up this auto dialer. They would say, well, we have to work up a pitch. So let us go around and talk to all your salespeople and ask them about the pitch that they make. And we'll put that pitch on our auto dialer, and we'll use our automatic dialer all over the country, and you'll make all kinds of money. So every time they would do that, these FBI would just fan out into the boiler room and talk to all these people and get them all on tape. And the tapes have proven to be absolutely devastating in court, far better than any other evidence the government's ever had, because many of the victims of these frauds are elderly, and it's difficult to get them to travel long distances to be witnesses, and they may not make the best witnesses in court. But when you have videotaped evidence of a scam artist laughing about defrauding an 89-year-old widow out of her money and calling the people who buy morons and saying, I've been trained by the best scammers in the business, and just making incriminating statement after incriminating statement, you play those for a jury, and these guys are going to jail.
Would you say this is the kind of updated snake oil salesman, to use an old cliche, that the technique is old, the technology is new?
the technology is new and new and getting newer and more sophisticated every day. But that's right. It's almost always that goes back to the fundamental. If it's too good to be true, it is. And they're always offering some kind of great pie in the sky type of deal. But it just becomes more and more sophisticated.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Fred Schulte, for joining us today on Fresh Air.
Okay, it was my pleasure.
Fred Schulte is investigations editor at the Fort Lauderdale Sun-Sentinel. His book is called Fleeced. This is Fresh Air.